welcome to pod 32 of the official Palace pod. I'm Chris Grierson from Palace TV, bloody bloody Palace app, bloody bloody bar, eagles.cpfc.co.uk, yakety yakety, YouTube, blah blah, social media channels. You all know the intro. Right, what have we got on this week's pod? Well, we have, obviously, we've got Roy Hodgson's press conference ahead of the trip to Manchester United. We've got a nice chat with Stephen Browett that we did at the first home game of the season in the new Tap Room Craft Ale Bar in the Lower Holmesdale Road stand. We have got a nice chat with Rob Warlow from football.london and formerly Croydon Advertiser. I chatted to him after the press conference. But first of all, here is Joel Ward batting away some of the regular questions that the players get in their Premier League productions interview.
Joel, one point then from the first two games against Everton and Sheffield United. Give us the positives and the negatives so far from the season.
Obviously, I think they speak for themselves. The result of the weekend was disappointing, but we dust ourselves down and go again. The positives you can take from that is defensively as a unit so far we've done pretty well. Obviously, the teams haven't really created too many chances against us, and that's a positive on the front. But we've got to keep that going, and obviously take the positives into the next game and put the negatives to the back mind and get rid of them.
You know, there are a few people tipping you guys to be in trouble this season. Is proving people wrong a motivation for you?
I think it wouldn't have been the first, and it certainly won't be the last. So I think, as players, we just kind of get on with what we can do and what we can affect. And people can talk all they like, but we're take care of business on the pitch, and that's all that we can do.
And you guys have been here before, haven't you? People tipping you to be in trouble, and then suddenly you end up 12th, 11th in the table. It always comes.
Yeah, it's one of those things, and it's football. You can go through spells in the season, whether it be at the start or at the middle or at the end, where you don't pick up as many points as you would like to. But every team will go through that, especially outside of the top four. So you're always going to have those highs and those times when your back's against the wall, but it's how you react in those situations that obviously sees you across the line in the end.
Obviously, with Aaron Wan-Bissaka gone, big opportunity for you. How much of an opportunity to play a huge part for Palace this season for you?
Yeah, obviously, throughout the time I've been here, I've been fortunate enough to play a lot of games, and I want that to continue. Az came in and done amazingly well, and he deserved what he's got now. It's natural for me to come back in, and I want to put in those performances that I feel that I'm used to being doing. So,
will he be missed?
Of course, he's going to be missed. But at the end of the day, he's now taken his career into his own hands, and he's moved on. And it's time for us to kind of react to that and move forward.
Will it be strange though coming up against him? I guess so soon after he's made that move to Old Trafford.
I got asked that question before, and it's one of those ones where you see people come and go so many times that it's natural in football that you're always going to come up against people that you've played. Yes, it's very soon and very early on in the season where he's only just left, but it is one of those things where football, it's a small circle in a sense, and you're always going to come up against players that you've played or that have come through the academy or that come and then gone quite soon. So it's one of those ones.
Has there been any chat? Has he been kicked out of the WhatsApp group? Has he?
No, I left the day after. No, it was one of those ones. He obviously said his goodbyes and we all wished him the best. And, you want to see him go on and do great things.
How improved are this Manchester United team, given that they've had the summer that they've had with the recruitment and more settled now at Ole Gunnar Solskjaer?
Yeah, they look like they've got an injection of life. And hopefully they lose that when they come and we play them on the weekend. But no, it's obviously going to be a test. They're in high spirits and they're playing well, and hopefully we can match them as best as we can and come away with a result.
And the test for you, Joel, is marking Mr. Marcus Rashford. That's going to be a test in itself.
Yeah, I mean, obviously we all know his qualities, and the quality player that he is. Obviously, Man United, they've got abundance of world-class players, and everyone's going to have to put in a big performance to nullify them.
obviously Aaron Wan-Bissaka gone, but in terms of keeping a player in Wilfred Zaha, that has to feel like a new signing, a marquee signing for you almost.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, Wilf, we know his quality, and I think you know, his that speaks for himself how much we kind of need him. And you know, the reception he got at the home game against Everton was remarkable. Really,
were you surprised by that he got such a good reception?
No, do you know what, Wilf is Wilf, and he means, and he has done so much for his club. So, you know, it's one of those ones where I think he let his football do the talking, and the stuff that's gone on around that will just get pushed aside, and we're kind of concentrating on the football.
It tells you a lot, though, doesn't it, about the Palace fans? Because a lot of players who would put in a transfer request might get a different reception from their own fans.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's very widely known how good the fans are, and you know how much support they give us on a weekly basis on and off the pitch.
Is it dangerous that you are so reliant on Wilfred Zaha?
I think we've shown that we can, you know, perform without him as well. Obviously, he is a big boost for us, but you know, it's 11-man team and you know, and a squad game. So there are going to be times when obviously he's not available, and we've got to kind of perform and do what we do without him.
I mean, he slipped back straight into the team without any problems, isn't he, despite being on the bench for the first game of the season, and Roy seems to be happy with him. But was there any sort of chat in training when he put that transfer request in, and was everything just carry on as normal?
No, I think as players, it's, you know, that's on his side. You know, I think we kind of just will go on with football and treat it as normal, and kind of just kind of get alongside him, help him out and bring him back in. You know, for us, he's a massive player, and you know, I don't think you can let all the outside noise affect you and affect it too much, because you know, at the end of the day, he needs to play, and he's contracted here, so you know, he's a Crystal Palace player.
Well, I've asked Roy about this before, and you know, said to me, you can understand why he would want to leave. Obviously, he's been away before, and he's come back, but it's the same for someone like Wan-Bissaka, isn't it? That you've given so much service to a club, but you can't sort of fault them for wanting to move on eventually.
No, I mean, everyone's got their aspirations and their dreams. You know, I don't think you'd be human if you didn't have those. So, you know, depending on what they may be, will reflect what happens.
Let's talk about someone you brought in, Gary Cahill. How exciting to have him around, someone of his experience, and he's done it all, won it all, hasn't he?
Yeah, exactly. I think you said it there, he's won it all. And that's a wealth of experience that's coming into the changing room, and obviously going to help us along this season and be a big part for us.
Has he brought something new to training? Is he, I guess, something that you can't really put your finger on, just that experience?
Yeah, I think it's the experience, obviously. I mean, the persona that he brings, obviously, because he's been at such a big club and led that club to winning things as well. So that's valuable for us. And, you know, he's slotted in really well. He's one of the lads, and he seems like a great guy.
As a right back, playing alongside him, you wouldn't really want to play, can't really think of anyone else you'd want to play alongside as a centre back with what he's done.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, it's always good to be alongside people that have done this and won things, and you know, have got that wealth of experience, and you know, we're blessed in that sense that we have got, you know, a lot of players with that experience. Maybe not that have won all those medals, but certainly have played a lot of games in the Premier League.
So your manager Roy Hodgson turned 72 recently, oldest manager in the history of the Premier League. Does his experience, and we talk about experience with Gary Cahill, but does the experience of the manager, is that going to prove crucial, particularly this season with the challenges that you might have?
Yeah, definitely, and I think it's proven that in the seasons prior to that, his experience and wealth of knowledge of the game, the way in which he does things, and I think it's invaluable for us to have that. He's certainly someone that has got, I'd say, the drive of someone starting out, and it's never been an issue. I think the gaffer wants to win, he wants to perform, and he wants us to do the best we can do.
Did anyone get him a card, get him a present, or are you the teacher's pet if you do that?
No, we were going to sing, but I don't think that would have gone down too well.
And you wouldn't have liked
it. We would have started, and only one person would have done it, so we said happy birthday, and he took that well.
But you have to take your hat off to him, don't you? Because at 72, I mean, if I get to 72, I think I'd be on cruises, playing bridge, bit of bowls, to put yourself out there at the highest level for inevitably criticism you're going to get and whatever, and to still be doing it at the top level is something.
Yes, yeah, it's brilliant, I think, to have that drive and that ambition throughout your career, and you know, taking it into, obviously now 72 is fantastic, and you know, I don't see it ending anytime soon.
I want to ask you, if there was one moment in your Premier League career that you could change, what would it be and why?
That's putting me on the spot. I don't think I would. There's not many times I think I'd like to change this or change that, because at the end of the day, what's my story so far has made me who I am today. So for me to have that and have that story behind me is what I cherish.
And equally, if there was a moment in the Premier League career that you've had that you wouldn't change for anything, what is that and why?
Similar sort of answer, but I think you know, crossing that white line when you know you're playing in the Premier League and on some of the biggest stages in the world is something that, you know, it's a pinch me moment. And for me, as a young boy, I've always dreamt of playing football, and to play at the highest level is something that's, you know, you can't take for granted.
Top man, thank you, Joel.
Cheers.
Joel Ward there speaking to Premier League Productions, and with another little preview towards the Man United game, and just to find out what kind of job he does at football.london, I walked with Rob Warlow from the training ground to New Beckenham Station after the press conference and had a little chat. Yes, that's right, I'm walking from the training ground to New Beckenham Station with Rob Warlow of football.london. Rob, what's your official job title?
Production editor at Football London.
Well, that's fancy. What does that mean then?
So I do a lot of work behind the scenes, sort of creating grids, fact boxes, sort of a lot of things that you'd see on articles. I do write a lot of articles myself, but a lot of sort of the, I suppose we call it like the framework and things sort of that you put on articles, sort of read more links, all those sort of things. I'm sort of responsible for a lot of that now.
And what were you doing today down at the training ground?
I was at Roy Hodgson's press conference, hearing him what he had to say ahead of Man United at the weekend. Writing up a full transcript of what he had to say, and a few other little stories around it as well.
Yeah, is that quite a lot of work for one person to do?
Yes. it's a lot when you consider you have the broadcast and the written section from the press conference, and I'm there for both. So we do a full transcript of the broadcast section, which is every word Roy Hodgson says, and as you can imagine, when he goes, you know, goes on for about 20 minutes, that's quite a lot to write up.
You're just crossing the road. Yeah, I can imagine. So how does it work with the written press when you have the broadcast section, which obviously you can put the stories up straight away, but the written section, how do you decide when to put an embargo on it? Because obviously with the print journalists, some of them, it won't go to press until the next day.
Yeah, I mean, it depends on when the press conference is held. So like today, it's been a Thursday and the game's on Saturday. So the majority of the written section will be embargoed to Friday night at 10:30. It's always 10:30 in the evening because that's, as you say, sort of with print deadlines, it's normally for the morning after it comes out in the paper, but online we put it at 10:30.
Is it annoying for you guys when the manager reveals something in the written section that wasn't asked in the broadcast section, or is that better for you? Because for us it's annoying because it's not in our video that goes on because we can't put it on, so we're always like, oh damn it, why didn't he say that earlier? But what's it like for you?
I think if it's a particularly good line that is relevant to perhaps something he said in the broadcast section, we may, between us, the journalists who are there, discuss it and say that should go with some of the live stuff. So that's what we call it, the live stuff, when it's the broadcast section, because obviously it's out there. You guys have done the video, we've done transcript, there's, you know, multiple stories around what Roy said. So that is, as you say, it goes out straight away and people know what he said. But the written section, if there's something that you can tie into it from the broadcast and it makes for a good line, then we may go and say, let's put that out at 4 or 5 o'clock tonight instead.
So it's quite a nice community amongst journalists. You're all quite fair with each other.
Yeah, I think so. I think we all, you know, we all know that's the game we're in, isn't it? We're doing there for the same thing. You all want to get that good line out of Roy, or if it's with a player on after the game, you want a good line from them. I think everyone knows that's how it works. It's been fairly standard for a while now, and you always get a mix of local and national journalists at every press conference.
Man United at the weekend, are you heading up there for the game?
I'm not myself, no. We have got someone going from the team, but it's not me this week.
What do you think? How's it going to be?
It'll be tough. United has started quite well. I've seen sort of highlights of the games. I saw the Chelsea game, saw highlights from Monday night, and I thought they looked quite good. I thought Wolves would be a tough game for them, but they could, perhaps should have won it. I've said they missed the penalty. It's never easy going to Old Trafford. I know that that's perhaps, it's not been as daunting a place in recent seasons, but they're still a good side, and you know, with good backing up there from 75,000 fans, you know, they're bound to be the favourites. I can't, you know, even with a sort of leaning towards Palace a little bit, you can't say that Palace are going to go into that as favourites. If they get a point, I think that would be a good result for them.
Obviously you covered Palace a lot, so you saw a lot of Aaron Wan-Bissaka. Are you, like me, telling all your Man United mates, see, I told you he was that good?
I think a lot of people from the outside last season sort of got to see how good he was. There were a few bits of analysis on him on Match of the Day, and you know, a few pundits had taken notice. I think this is perhaps not what Palace fans want to hear, but he was probably destined for bigger things. I think whether it was this summer or, you know, another year perhaps, but when a club like Man United come in for you and you know, you're going to be their first choice right back, it's pretty hard to turn that down.
Okay, so as we turn onto Park Road, nearing New Beckenham Station now, leaving leafy Copa's Cote Road behind, let's talk about Football.London. So what is the deal now with Football.London and the Croydon Advertiser?
So we're still part of the same company. I was previously Crystal Palace reporter for the Croydon Advertiser for several years. People obviously would have known Mark Ritson as well. He was there before me and worked with me when I was covering Palace. My job now, I'm now sort of exclusive to Football London in that that's who I work for, but they're still part of Trinity Mirror, or Reach now is, which the Croydon Advertiser is still a part of. So the Croydon Advertiser still exists as a paper. The stuff that we do online still go in the paper for each week. I liaise with the guys who are the editors for it and sub-editors and tell them this is what we've got on Palace this week and this is what's good for the paper or what's relevant, and then they will put it on the pages.
Cool. Perfect. Well, thank you very much for speaking to you. I will leave you to tap in or whatever you do. Yeah. No? Travel card? Weekly travel card?
Travel card for the day, yeah.
Paper one?
Yes.
Look at that. Old school. Well, safe journey home and I'll see you at the next press conference. Well, I do hope Rob got his train safely home. Moving on to more boozy things, this is me chatting to Stephen Browett at the opening of the new Taproom Bar in the Lower Holmesdale, and he's going to tell us all about it. Steve, here we are at a new bar. What is the Taproom?
The Taproom, it has got some decent beer in it, which is local South London beer from our friends at the Cronks. And also a guest beer, which this week is from Wandsworth, from a brewery called By the Horns.
So we had Cronk's Bar before. What has changed?
What has changed is that these are not cask conditioned beers, they're keg beers, which means that they keep a bit. Because the problem in the past with cask beer is you had to throw it away if you didn't sell it. So there's going to be, they'll be here all the time, and there'll be a guest beer changing. And it'll be fresh and drinkable.
What's the guest beer this week?
So it's called Hopadelic, and it's made with American hops. So it's very sort of citric, nice bite to it. But as I say, it's a South London beer, although the hops have come from, I think, Oregon, something like that.
Does it make you happy that so many young people like proper beer now?
Yeah, I mean, I think real ale used to be regarded as an old man's drink, and you had to have a beard and sandals like me. But now craft beer, that seems to be the buzz expression. Now craft beer is quite hipster, and there's a lot of young people who are really interested in it. And South London is very much a craft beer place. There are, I don't know, 50, 60 breweries in places like Brixton and Rockley and Southwark and all over the place. Even where I live in Wandsworth, I think we've got five or six.
What do you drink over in the director's box?
Well, I tend to go to the pub for a pint first, although I'll be coming here now. And then I have a bit of wine, I'm afraid.
It's all right. It's allowed.
I guess we've got fantastic wine at Palace as well. We've got the Palace Red, or the Eagle Red, it's called.
Yeah, it was very popular at my wedding, so thank you very much for that.
Went down all right, did it? Yeah, we have Eagle Red, Eagle White, and now we have Eagle Rosé as well, which seems to be very popular.
And finally, you've got your own column in the programme. What can we expect from it this year?
Yeah, I don't know how that came about. I think that they wanted someone who's been to a lot of away games to write something about Palace away trips, and I've been going away since I was a kid, so there's hardly a ground I haven't been to and hardly a pub near a ground that I haven't been to, so when it comes to how to get to away games, what beer to drink, where to go, any tips, that kind of stuff, you know, I'm a bit of an old hand at that, so that's what I'll be writing in the programme every week.
Thanks, Steve.
Steve Browett there, a bit of a Palace legend. And moving on to another legend of the world of football, it's Roy Hodgson fielding questions from the world's media.
Mam in particular has been making some positive noises on social media, which we'll talk about more generally later.
Yeah, well, I don't pay a lot of attention to those messages. I pay more attention to what I see here. He hasn't trained with us. He trained with us for a while and then felt his knee again. And he hasn't trained with us now for the last 2 weeks, and he still trains with the physio, aside from the first team group. So really, until he gets back into training with us and starts to work again this fitness programme, because unfortunately, once again, both he and James Tomkins, they're going to really miss a pre-season, because their pre-season has been spent in the medical room and training alone with these sports science people.
Have you seen what you want to see on the training pitch this week to suggest that last week's performance was a one-off?
Yes, absolutely. It wasn't, you know, no one has tried to disguise the fact that we weren't happy with the performance, and we don't want to take any away from Sheffield United, who of course gave a very good performance, but we don't want to take anything away from them by just suggesting we were bad and they weren't good. But we weren't at all happy with our performance, but I'm 100% certain the players are as disappointed and angry about the performance as I am, and that they'll be trying very hard to put that right.
Is Old Trafford the place, though, that you really want to go to try and put a bad performance right?
I don't know. I mean, Old Trafford, for teams like ourselves, and I've worked with, you know, teams like Fulham and West Brom as well, who are sitting in a similar position, Old Trafford's always been a very daunting place to go if you need a result. And unfortunately, if I look back at my record at Old Trafford, it doesn't really measure up to any high degree of scrutiny. But that's because they are a top team, a very top club. They really have the ability, if you like, to sign players and that we will never have. So I think, like all clubs, when you go to Old Trafford, it's an opportunity. It's a great occasion, because that's a place every footballer wants to play. You know, every footballer in the world would like to say, I played at Old Trafford. So in that respect, it's a great occasion. If you're saying there, this is a must-win game, how do you feel? Then it's not quite so good, because it's not going to be easy to make that a must-win game.
Obviously, it was a bit of a lesson in the end, the result certainly for Chelsea at last game at Old Trafford, but many people say that they actually played all right for large parts of the game.
I agree. I saw the game, of course, and in particular their first half performance was looking very good, and they could quite easily have been in the lead until the penalty situation. But of course, in the second half, you saw how good Manchester United can be, and I watched the game against Wolves also, and I thought in particular the first half, but even swathes of the second half, they played extremely well. They've had a real good start to the season, and their new players are showing, you know, why they've been bought and why the club and the manager, Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, has decided to invest money in them.
You feel Aaron's fitted in well already?
I thought he was excellent, yeah. I think he's fitted in very well. I thought his performance in particular against Wolves was outstanding, and we don't need reminding of how good he is, because we were lucky enough to benefit from him being so good for a year and a half here before he left us.
Will a full, noisy theatre of dreams be a good place to give an experienced player like Gary Cahill his debut?
Any place is a good place to give an experience, and a good player like Gary Cahill his debut, but at the moment I haven't fully decided what our team lineup should be, and certainly it's not something I would want to divulge at the moment. Not because I'm suggesting that Manchester United are quaking in their boots wondering what sort of team we're going to play, but just because I don't like to give out teams before, certainly before I've spoken to the players, and the players at the moment have got no idea what the team is.
A lot was said before the transfer window, during the transfer window, and now by me since the transfer window about what looks like a lack of goals in the club, but it's proving to be the case in the opening two games.
It's been the case for a long time, and it's obviously a problem, or certainly a situation that we're always conscious of, and until we can score goals we're not going to win matches. That's just a very obvious statement, a fact. So we need to get better at scoring goals. We need our players who play in the front positions to start scoring some goals for us, but the fact is they're very conscious of it, and I can't ask more from those guys in training, and I can't ask more from them in terms of their attitude and their desire to score goals. Now we've just got to find a way of getting those goals against top class opponents like the ones we find every week in the Premier League.
I know you're not going to really pay any attention or respond to press speculation, but as it's out there, I'll put it to you. One paper suggesting that there's negotiations ongoing with Christian about either extending his contract or a new contract. Can you say anything about that?
Only what you've just said. I believe negotiations are taking place. James Tomkins comes into that category as well, certainly, but I can't tell you any more how far advanced those negotiations are, because they're being handled, of course, by our chairman or by our sporting director, Doug Freeman.
But as a manager of the team, that would be something that you would welcome?
It's up to the club. The club, you know, when players get into the last year of their contract, they find themselves in a difficult situation, because players in the last year of their contract can leave free of charge. So these are club matters, really. And if Christian signs a new contract, I should be happy for him, and I should be happy to continue working with him.
Well, have you had a VAR so far? I know all your managers went down and had a look. I went yesterday, actually. It's very impressive, the setup they've got there. Is it working out about as you expected?
No, I was under the impression, especially when we had people talking to us about it when the Premier League came to the meeting, and in particular last season when we were talking about introducing it, I was under the impression that it was going to be only used really for very clear and obvious errors where the referee has made a clear mistake. Now it seems to me that we are with a fine-tooth comb trying to work out if someone's arm is actually onside or offside, so that surprised me. I must say, you know, every goal being analysed, where, quite honestly, you know, when the goal is scored, I'm pretty sure that there are many people like me, and people who've been involved in football a long time, who don't imagine there could be anything wrong, only to find out, when you take the technology to the degree that we take the technology, that in actual fact, if you look closely, this player's arm is actually a centimetre or so offside. I always got the impression you couldn't score goals with your arm or your hand anyway, so I'm always a bit sceptical about someone's arm being in an offside position which disallows a goal. So I don't think at the moment that if you speak to people like myself and other managers that we're going to be wholeheartedly supportive of what we've seen so far. But we are wholeheartedly supportive, of course, of injustice being corrected. Where a clear mistake has been made, that unfortunately hasn't been picked up by the people. But I think in time, I'd like to think anyway, that maybe we'll have a slightly larger margin of tolerance, and that when the VAR people look themselves and they see, if we flag this up, we're going to be discussing centimetres, that they'll just say to the ref, you didn't see anything, so let's get on with it. But who knows? It's a fact of life. I've seen very good answers to your questions from the Guardiolas and the Pochettinos of the world, who found themselves in, you know, losing goals or getting goals that way, and they've been unbelievably sanguine about the whole affair. So there's no reason for me to be anything less than sanguine either. But if you're asking my opinion as a football lover, that's where I am at this moment in time.
I don't know what your Twitter handle is, Roy, but
I don't know myself.
What's your view on social media and whether or not football should boycott it just for a while until they get their act in order?
Well, once again, you know, I think we've got measures in place which are important so the players can report things. But these are questions when they come to people like myself who haven't not brought up in the Twitter generation. You know, Twitter came well into my lifetime. I think you'll find most of us will find it hard to embrace, if you like, some of the things that go on there. But once again, we're talking about something which is now very much a fact of life. It's very much a part of the life of 20-year-olds who, you know, for the last 10 or 15 years have been absolutely immersed in Facebook and Twitter and WhatsApp and all of these type of things, Snapchat. The fact that I don't have to get involved in it personally is a good thing for me, I think, but I am involved in it, whether I like it or not, because all of the players I work with, they're very much involved, and it does affect them. So when they're being abused online, or where people are writing in and saying things that affect their mental health or their attitude towards games, of course, it's something which, unfortunately, rebounds very, very firmly onto me. But I don't know as yet, no one's told me yet, if you do this, you can make a big difference to what's happening there. And I would welcome someone saying to me, look, why don't you do this, and this will actually not take away necessarily some of the things that you're finding, but at least it will lessen it, it will diminish some of the worst excesses. I would be very happy to do it. But unfortunately, no one in the last 4 or 5 years has been able to do that, so I'll have to wait and see. Whether football should do something, that will be up to the authorities, and I'm pretty certain that whatever they decide to do, they'll have my backing.
Just finally, quickly on that, you wouldn't go so far as a manager to say to your players you're banned from social media?
Can you do that? I mean, can you? I mean, I suppose one could. I mean, draconian measures never work, so that would only, you know, that's stopping people from doing things they really want to do and imposing. You're asking for more problems, I think, than you're going to solve. I think we constantly preach to our players, and the club constantly preaches to our players not to make major errors, but you told me today about a story that one of our players has supposedly put something out on Twitter which wasn't put out by him at all. It was put out by his agent or someone he knows. So where do you go from there? You know, if you call the player in and say, this is ridiculous what you've done, you're wrong, and he says, well, it wasn't me, I didn't do it, this was somebody else, where do you go from there? I mean, it's a difficult one.
Thanks, Gary. Can you pass the mic? Thank you.
Pleasure.
This is Will from PLP.
Roy, is this a far more dangerous Manchester United compared to last season?
No, we played them last season. I think it was about Ulla's second or third game. They came here. They were really very, very good. At that stage, I think he'd just taken over, and the team was in fine form, and they were really flying, and they were playing just like they're playing at the moment. You're actually referring perhaps to the fact there was a tail off towards the end of the season where they dropped a few points. But I wasn't involved in games against Manchester United then. The game I was involved in, they were every bit as quick to the ball, as aggressive, as sharp in their play as I've seen them in the opening two games.
Is proving people wrong a big thing for you, Roy?
In what respect?
In the sense that I know you don't pay attention to what's said in terms of you guys might have your struggles this season and so on, but is that still a motivation for you?
We have that every season, don't we, basically, you know, whether we start, however we start. As it happens, I don't think we've ever started well, so I suppose I can't really refer to that. It's always been a bad start, but the fact is every season we have to accept that, you know, we're not going to be one of the teams that people are talking about to take the Premier League or to set the Premier League alight. We're going to be one of the teams that people are going to bracket with teams that will have to work very hard if they want to stay in the league, and we fully accept that and even embrace that, because we know that too. We think, that is the players and I in particular, that we've done okay these last couple of seasons in getting getting where we are and doing what we've done, but we don't expect people suddenly then to start elevating us to another platform. We know every season starts and you've got to do it all over again. And if we ever lose sight of the fact that every game for us is going to be a real battle and something where we're going to be tested to the limits of our ability, then we're going to be making a huge mistake. And none of us, I think, are prepared to allow that to happen. And as the season is now wearing on, at least the squad of players that I was hoping to see and be able to use for this battle, they are there for me to use, you know, in the pre-season matches and even going into the first game, we were still very limited as to the players I could call upon.
But it's become a common theme, hasn't it, with people tipping you for trouble perhaps, and then look where you end up, 12th, 11th, right up the other end of the table. And you mentioned the words elevation to another platform. The fact that you have finished 12th last season, 11th the season before, is 10th a realistic ambition for you, the top 10?
Well, I don't know that we need to set those sort of ambitions. If you're saying to me, do you think it's a possibility you could do that? You know, I would obviously say yes, of course, because we've almost done it the last 2 years. But on both occasions, it's been because we've had a very good end to the season. You know, a long period of time before we had that surge which lifted us up to that position, we were actually much closer, looking over our shoulder at relegation. So I don't know at the moment, unless we can really solve our problems up front and start banging goals left, right and centre, that we can actually honestly say, no problem, you know, we're going to be miles away from any danger. I think we've got to accept that danger could possibly be there, and we've got to work hard as a team and work hard as a club to make certain that, you know, we put things right and we solve and improve in our problem areas. But we're doing that. But then the trouble is, so are the other 19 teams in the league. That's the only problem. It'd be nice if we were doing it and they weren't.
And just finally for me, are we ever going to see, Gary mentioned there about social media, we're never going to see Mr. Hodgson on Instagram or Snapchat with the bunny ears and the dog face and the grandkids
well,
into
I don't
that?
Know, I don't know. I don't know enough about, you know, what really goes on there. I mean, all I can understand is, of course, that when you open an account, there you are at the mercy of people who want to contact you and say things to you and about you. Now, that can sometimes, I guess, be a very positive thing, but I'm also aware that it could be very negative, and I don't honestly feel that I need either of those two things, particularly in my life. And the thing that would concern me a little bit is that I remember talking to Fernando Torres at Liverpool about there, and he told me that there were about 20 Fernando Torreses out there. And that would really concern me. You know, how do you know who you're speaking to? And as I say, you'd have to give me a complete lesson in that. But hearing that was enough to put me off, because I'd have been worried that suddenly there was a lot of people saying things in my name which had nothing to do with me because it wasn't my account.